Master and Commander by Patrick O'Brien. Read by Robert Hardy. The music room in the Governor's house at Port Mahon, a tall, handsome, pillared octagon, was filled with the triumphant first movement of Locatelli's C major quartet. The players, Italians pinned against the far wall by rows and rows of little round gilt chairs, were playing with passionate conviction. And on the little gilt chairs at least some of the audience were following with an equal intensity. There were two in the third row on the left-hand side, and they happened to be sitting next to one another. The listener farther to the left was a man of between 20 and 30 whose big form overflowed his seat. He was wearing his best uniform, the white lapelled blue coat, white waistcoat, breeches and stockings of a lieutenant in the Royal Navy, with the silver medal of the Nile in his buttonhole, and the deep white cuff of his gold button sleeve beat the time. The high note came, the pause, the resolution, and with the resolution the sailor's fist swept firmly down upon his knee. He leant back in his chair, sighed happily, and turned towards his neighbour with a smile. The words, very finely played, sir, I believe, were formed in his gullet, if not quite in his mouth. When he caught the cold and indeed inimical look, and heard the whisper, "If you really must beat the measure, sir, let me entreat you to do so in time and not half a beat ahead." Jack Aubrey's face instantly changed from friendly, ingenuous, communicative pleasure to an expression of hostility. His colour mounted. He fixed his neighbour's pale eye for a moment, said, "I trust," and the opening notes of the slow movement cut him short. Only part of Jack's mind paid attention, for the rest of it was anchored to the man at his side. A covered glance showed that he was a small, dark, white-faced creature in a rusty black coat, a civilian. He might have been anything between 20 and 60. About my age, in fact, however, thought Jack, the ill-looking son of a bitch to give himself such airs. With this, almost the whole of his attention went back to the music, and he did not think of his neighbour again until the end of the movement, and then he avoided looking in his direction. The minuet set Jack's head wagging. In the last movement, an elbow drove into his ribs, and the sound "shh" hissed in his ear. He found that his hand was high in the air, beating time. He lowered it, clenched his mouth shut, and looked down at his feet until the music was over. In the applause and general din, his neighbour looked at him, not so much with defiance as with total heartfelt disapprobation. They did not speak, but sat in rigid awareness of one another, while Mrs. Hart, the commandant's wife, went through a long and technically difficult piece on her harp. As it could not for the moment find any outward expression, Jack Aubrey's anger took on the form of melancholy. He thought of his shipless state. He owed his prize agent, his man of business, £120, and its interest of 15% was about to fall due, and his pay was £5.12 a month. He thought of men he knew, junior to him, but with better luck or better interest, who were now lieutenants in command of brigs or cutters, or had even been promoted master and commander, and all of them snapping up trabacolos in the Adriatic, tartans in the Gulf of Lions, zebecs and settees along the whole of the Spanish coast. Glory, professional advancement, prize money. The storm of applause told him that the performance was over, and he beat his palms industriously. Jack Aubrey and his neighbour in the rusty black coat stood up at the same time, and they looked at one another. Jack said, "My name is Aubrey, sir. I'm staying at the Crown."
"Mine, sir, is Maturin. I am to be found any morning at Joselito's coffee-house. May I beg you to stand aside?" For a moment Jack felt the strongest inclination to snatch up his little gilt chair and beat the white-faced man down with it, but he gave way with a tolerable show of civility.
The Crown, where Jack was staying, had a certain resemblance to its famous namesake in Portsmouth. It had the same immense gilt and scarlet sign hanging up outside, a relic of former British occupations.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?